Welcome to Master the Start, a podcast for young professionals where we interview business experts on how you can master the start of your life in business.
What's up, everyone, and welcome back. This is the 23rd episode of the Master the Start podcast presented by GoMahi.com, and we've got a great episode ahead for all of you this wonderful week. This week, we have Suzanne Corso on the show, and Suzanne is the author of three novels, Brooklyn Story, The Sweet Life, and Hello Hollywood, the last part of the trilogy release by Simon & Schuster in 2015. She has also penned the screenplay to Brooklyn Story. Corso has produced for the New York and London stages, Roman Nights. She has also produced two documentaries, Indonesia, A Personal Journey, and Hear Them Roar. All of this is super interesting. And you know, even if you are a student of business, you can learn a lot about her background, the way she grew up, and trust me, it's a crazy story. She fell in love with a mobster, got out of there before he was charged with murder, then fell in love with a wonderful man that ultimately made $100 million and they lost it all in 2008. So, just like always, like every single other week, make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Please, please, please. It means the world to us when you subscribe. We know you care then. So selfishly, do it for me. Also, please comment on what you thought of this show, what you've thought of other shows, good or bad. We're here. We're listening to the feedback. We want to make improvements for you. Most importantly, enjoy this week's episode of Master the Start. And I almost forgot, if you got kids in the car, maybe listen later. Susan is a wonderful individual, but she does drop a couple of F-bombs. So just a quick heads up and enjoy this week's episode of Master the Start. How you doing?
Hi, I'm good. My apologies for the back and forth. It's been crazy.
It has been crazy, but it's completely understandable and it's totally fine. Well,
you're wonderful. Thank you so much for this.
Oh, of course. Thank you for joining us. It's going to be kind of fun doing a two-part session.
Oh, no, it's great. I mean, once I'm moving with the movie and all that good stuff, I will definitely call you and we'll continue it.
Sweet. Sounds awesome. But let's just, I think it'd be valuable for our audience. And you're so incredibly busy, we should probably just hop right into it.
Yes, go ahead.
All right, sweet. So who is Suzanne? Like, backstory. Your backstory is mind-blowing.
But yeah, it's really funny that I'm 50 and I'm alive. It's all good and that I'm half-watt normal, so that's a good thing to start. So anyway, born and raised in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn in the early 80s. And really what Brooklyn Story, my first book, is about is really based on my life. So, you know, it's really the same type of thing, but I changed the names fictitiously because I just figured that it was the right thing to do. You don't want to talk about people that are still alive. You know, it's something that you want to keep very confidential. So born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, I lived with my Jewish grandmother and my Catholic mother. My dad left when I was born. He was very abusive physically and emotionally to my mother. Never met my dad till I was 21 years old. So that was another saga in itself. So I was raised by these two powerful yet weak women, if that makes any sense. And the only exit I had, the only escape I had in my life was writing. That was it. It was very cathartic to me. So at 17 years old, my grandmother handed me a Smith Corona typewriter and said, Bubala, write yourself out of this story. And it was the only thing that kept me alive because at 15 years old, I met a boy from the other side of the tracks who was very bad. We later find out, flash forwarding to 10 years later, that he wound up killing 22 people. So it was one of those things that I didn't know what to do. He made the papers. My life was in awry. It was pretty amazing to get through that, especially with my mother, my grandmother. It was just a lot going on, Bobby, to be honest with you.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, I'm trying to give you as much as I can, but you know, you could ask questions. I'll be more specific, but I think the real reason why I wrote my first book was for me and me alone. Two, it was therapeutic. It was cathartic. I don't know what I would have done without the written word. And I think my message to so many young women, even women, you know, age doesn't make a difference. I felt that the writing got everything out. And when you get everything out, it makes your life better. I mean, we need to forgive. Not that we forget. You can't forget what happens in your life, but you need to forgive to move on. Without that, you're dead. You can't do it. And I have a tremendous amount of faith. People ask me all the time. I did, you know, interviews on TV, interviews in magazines. Well, what keeps you going? My faith. And people sometimes look at you and they second guess that. And that's okay. We live in a world where people second guess things. But without faith, without believing in something higher than yourself, you don't have anything. Think about the world we live in.
I completely agree with that. Yes.
Right.
Definitely. Right. And
so, I mean, that's where I'm at.
And I think that's really interesting because, and I think whether you're religious or not, faith allows you to have a vision in which you can follow.
Well, you have to, especially what I went through. I mean, the monarch of my family was my grandmother. You know, she was an old school Jewish woman. And my mother, of course, being born from her in the Jewish religion, she was also Jewish. But because she stepped outside of her religion and married a Catholic Sicilian guy, it just, you know, everything went awry in the family. My grandmother didn't want anything to do with that. My mother rebelled against her. Then the guy leaves her, which is my so-called father, and she rebels against my grandmother and becomes Catholic and raises me Catholic. So I have a blessed mother on my neck at the age of five. And my grandmother's given me Jewish stars. So there was dysfunction from the very start. I didn't know what I was, a Jew or I was Italian. But I respect both of them. And I love the fact that I'm half and half. But I am Catholic. I made all my sacraments when I got married. That was my decision. I have a 19-year-old daughter who goes to college in California. And she's also Catholic. She went to Catholic school here in New York. That was my decision. So it's not that I ran away from my Jewish heritage background, you know, in the Jewish religion, when you're born of a Jewish vagina, you're a Jew, but that's okay. I am who I am. And I get the best of both worlds, I think. So as far as the religion goes, I'm cool.
Very cool. You mentioned that you had the unique opportunity to date a mobster.
Well, yeah, I guess it is a unique. Well, let me give you a little backstory on that. You know, back in the early 80s and 90s, and I grew up in the 80s, those were my teenage years. You know, living in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, it's a prominently Italian neighborhood, very old school. The women in the black dresses, the widows, you know, there's a lot of mobsters, there's a lot of focaccerias. 18th Avenue is a very spry place. You know, it was like a breeding ground for these so-called gangsters and all of this stuff and, you know, mobsters, whatever, same word. And of course, all the girls were privy to men like this. So of course, we're going to wind up dating men like this. It's just, you have to be smart. Do you stay in the life? Do you get out of the life? There's nothing glamorizing about the life. Nothing. You know, I think that so many people are so attracted to it, you know, like the show The Sopranos and all of that stuff. And I think half of these guys don't even really want to be in it, but they have no choice. So when I met my boyfriend, I was 15, he was 17. So he had to try to prove himself. I had no idea what he was doing. So, you know, when he was out doing whatever it is, picking me up late at night, I had no idea if there was a body in the trunk. I had no idea what the hell was going on. Until years later, when everything surfaced, and next thing you know, he's going to jail. Next thing you know, I'm finding all this out. I'm like, oh boy, I'm lucky I'm alive.
So how did you get out of that lifestyle? How did you make the change?
Yeah, what happened was emotionally, I was able to write about it. So emotionally, I was detaching, which was a great thing because when you emotionally detach from something, your life is saved. It's great. So now the physicality of it all is he wound up getting arrested, going to trial, and getting 25 years to life. So bye-bye, he's gone. That was fantastic for me. And I think when you do a crime, you got to do the time, and it is what it is. So that was the end of it. I never saw him again. And then I went on with my life.
Jeez. So you went on with your life. And this part of your story is just mind-blowing. And I've listened to some of the things that you've had to say about losing $100 million and how you handled it.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. Like, yeah, look, it really is.
Yeah. It's, you know, look, so then I have about a 5-year separation. The ex-boyfriend's in jail. My grandmother winds up passing away, which was horrible for me because I feel she was the only person in my life who truly loved me, not jealous, wanted the world for me. Because of her, I started writing books. So that was that. So I was devastated. 4 years later, my mother dies at 47 years old of lung cancer. But I was not as so devastated about losing my mother because I felt that she went to another place where she belonged. She didn't belong here on earth. My mother couldn't function. She really couldn't. And I don't want to say it was a burden to me, but I actually, it was a blessing when she passed away. I feel that she helps me more from up above than she did on earth. So I lose my biological family. I don't know where my father is. I'm all alone. And 3 months to the day after my mother passed, I wind up meeting my husband walking down the street here in New York City. He was working at the New York Stock Exchange. He's an up-and-coming specialist, which they've done away with the specialist at this point. That's the person who makes the market. They're between the broker and the actual company. I can't get into specifics because I wouldn't know what I'm talking about. But I know. I don't want to get into it. I know even being married for 23 years, I totally don't know. But anyway, walking down the block one day, a man taps me on the shoulder. And he said, Miss, I think you're very beautiful. If you don't have a boyfriend or husband, I'd like to take you to brunch or dinner. And this is a line that everyone brings up. They make fun of me. And I said to him, what is brunch? I didn't know. I was growing up in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, having Italian dinners on Sundays with God knows who, sauce, macaroni, pasta, sausage, you know the drill. And when he said brunch, I went, what's brunch? And he's like, he looked at me and he said, please call me. 3 days later, I give him a call. He takes me to brunch on my first date. I know what it is. I'm all excited. He introduces me to a whole different world that I had no idea existed, from Phantom of the Opera to Le Cirque to a helicopter ride to a limo. I mean, I don't want to make it like it's all materialistic. It's not. But it's a world that you then slowly slip into, which is so beautiful because you're able to see so much. Yes, and money can provide that. But we fell in love. A month and a half, he takes me to Bermuda, asked me to marry him on the beach, and the rest is history. You know, I mean, it was unbelievable. It really, really was. And I watched his growth as a specialist on the New York Stock Exchange. By far, he was one of the greatest traders on the New York Stock Exchange. No doubt he'll go down in history.
Geez. So
yeah,
I think I'd like to dive
too. That's my second book. I know.
And I'd like to dive further into that because I think so many people would see you in your position, and if you look back, what year did you guys lose it all? 2008, 2009?
2008. It was a decline of the markets, and 2008, he basically lost everything. Now, I don't know. I'm torn between this right now because it wasn't my money. I didn't make the money. I know we were married. I know we had a child. I know all of that joint stuff, but I was not the one who was mad. I was not the one who lost the money. So it didn't affect me as much. There was a part of me that was, oh, you know what? Now I don't have to have three houses. Now I don't have to worry about the helicopter. Now I don't have to worry about, now I could really have one home, money in the bank, and be normal. There was something about that that made me feel maybe that was from my childhood. I just liked security. I think that money is a wonderful thing, but it really keeps you afloat. It's a financial security. If you don't have it, it shouldn't define you. Money doesn't define you. Like I said in a New York Post article, it doesn't define who you are. When we lost everything, I had a handful of friends that loved me for who I am. And now the rest of them leave because when you have no money and no power, no one gives a shit about you. Anthony, it was very hard for him. You know, he got very sick. He went into a psychiatric ward. Then he came out. I stood by him. You know, my daughter was only 10 at the time, and she had another 8 years to go before going to college. So I was not going to leave the relationship because of money. I loved him and he was a wonderful man, but it was very hard for him to come back. You know, when you're making so much money and you're at such a level, who are you to take a job for $150 a year? Well, nothing is beneath any of us. And that's the most important thing. When I had all the money in the world, I said hello to the janitors in my building. If they needed something, I'd give it to them. I don't look at life. I don't compare people because they have money or they don't. It's a very important way to look at life. It doesn't matter that you have money because at any point that money's taken away from you. Who are you really? That is a big subject people should think about, especially the world we live in today.
Even when you guys did have the money, Did you feel, and the reason why I'm asking this is because I believe a lot of people believe money is that level of success and power that will ultimately make them happy.
Of course.
And you being at one point in the ultra successful category, there are very few people that will ever even experience half of that, right?
No, it's the 1%. It's the upper launch 1%. And I hit that already. And I'm going to hit it on my own.
Yeah.
That's going to be a great thing. And I don't, you know, I believe in not really showing the wealth. You don't have to spend all your money all the time. You have to be cool about it. But it's a very interesting feeling. You're right.
But when you were there, were you ultimately as happy as you are now?
No, I'm happier now. I know that sounds crazy, but I'm not going to lie to you. I wish I did have at least half of it. But if I had half of it in the bank, you wouldn't know about it. See, I look at life differently. I could have one apartment and have money in the bank and you don't have to know about it. It's just security for me because of the way I grew up. When we were losing everything, my survivor mode kicked in gear. What do I do? What do I sell? How do I pay bills? I'm all about paying the bills, having no debt, then enjoying life. A lot of people don't live that way. But it never affected me. I'm not a victim. You cry for 10 minutes, you give up your Ritz-Carlton friggin' apartment, and you move on, honey. The most important thing in life, I don't care what anyone says, is your health. If you're healthy, you could become wealthy again. If not, you're screwed. You got to stay focused in your health, your mind and body. Very important. Or you'll get nothing.
Yeah, so did you write your first book after the crash?
I wrote it. This is what happened. My book became a bestseller, and my publisher is Simon & Schuster. And they said to me, okay, we want a follow-up book. I go, you do? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, all right, what am I going to write about? I'm a person who writes about what she knows because I know characters so well. I develop them so well because I have so many nuts around me. And it was very easy for me to develop them, including developing myself. So I decided to write about the rise and fall of my husband and even our relationship. I felt that it would affect a lot of women. It would affect a lot of men reading it. And the premise of that book, too, which is The Sweet Life, is money doesn't define you. You got to go a little deeper. It's great to have, but it doesn't define you. People have to figure that out on their own. I certainly can't tell them. So it's very interesting.
It had to take some courage to create books about your own life and know that everyone was going to get a little inside look.
Oh, that's okay. I don't mind talking about my life because my first life and my second life, and I'm only 50, I have another whole life ahead of me. But the bottom line is I have so much knowledge about the heartache and the ups and downs and being with an abusive man and, you know, all of these things that I want to share it so I can help other women. Because you don't have to put up with this. You know, if you're in an abusive relationship like book one, you got to get out of it. But how do you get out of it? You know, I've had so many women write me emails and they reach me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Oh my God, I read your book and it saved my life and all stuff like that. You can't put a price on something like that if you're helping other women. It's a big deal. That's how I feel.
Definitely. Well, then how exactly to get deeper into the writing? Do you have a specific style in how you write? How do you lay out your books beforehand? How do you time block and actually take the time to write your books? How long do they typically take?
I tell you the truth. So book one, I wrote when I was 17 years old. Like I said, my grandmother gave me the typewriter, put the page in, and I typed Brooklyn Story. Now, I cannot even believe at 17 years old, all the way to 2010, that Simon & Schuster, they were able to keep that title. And we didn't have to change the title, which is unheard of. It just doesn't work that way. So I was blessed in that respect. And I don't know, it just came from God. That was the title. And I didn't know what I was doing at 17 years old, but I knew enough to write an outline. I knew to prepare an outline from beginning to end of my life and what was happening in my life each day when I was with my grandmother, when I was with my mother, and my mother was being promiscuous and my mother was doing drugs and I was with the crazy boyfriend and my crazy friends, and I was writing everything down. That's how I did it with the first book. I didn't know what I was doing, but I guess I did because I got published 21 years later. But it was just something that was the first one. The second one, I prepare an outline. You always prepare an outline. I do beginning, middle, and end. Sometimes the end changes, or sometimes I write the ending before I even start. That's just my method. An outline is the way to go.
And really quick, just to interrupt you, what does that outline look like?
It's just, you know, people do it on computers. I did it longhand on a yellow, you know, notebook. And it's just, you know, I love to have a title. I love to start with a title. And then I like to write my beginning. Where am I beginning this? I always love the beginning of a story. But sometimes what I really like to do is I'll take the ending and I'll make it the prologue. So I'm actually giving you the ending at the beginning, but you're going to take the journey and wonder, oh, wow, how the hell does she get here? Mm. I don't give it away, but I give some of it away. So you really know what you're in for, the journey that you're in for when you're reading my story, which is very important because you all want to get to the end. And I don't care what anyone says. Everyone wants a happy ending. And I would never... I love happy endings, and that's the way my life will end. It's happy. There's no way around it. We make what we create in our minds, we could actually make happen.
True that.
Yeah.
So what did you do for Hello Hollywood? Same strategy?
Same strategy. That was very interesting because I don't like doing things in twos. I like doing things in threes. For me, like the Holy Trinity, I love the number three. So when they said, okay, what do you want to do next? Like, well, let's wrap it up. Let's do a trilogy. Let's keep Samantha Bonte, who really is me, but let's keep this character going all the way through. Let's give her this life of the three largest entities in the world. Because there's really five entities, what our world is made of. You'll like this. So I feel that there was the mafia, Wall Street, Hollywood, politics, and religion. Politics and religion, I have no desire to write about, nor would I. I don't like speaking about my political views. Religion, I don't really mind. But political views nowadays, you can't talk about it. So those are the three entities I wrote about, Mafia, Wall Street, and Hollywood. So Hollywood is about my journey, leaving my ex-husband and going into Hollywood and making a movie out of Brooklyn Story, ironic, which we're going to do. So that's my whole journey. My daughter's grown up. We now live in Hollywood. My father comes back into my past for drama. And then I wind up making my movie, Living Happily Ever After. Everything is wonderful. There's a lot of drama in book three, but then it winds up beautifully, self-discovery. But a lot of it I made up. A lot of it I was almost vibrating as to what was going to happen in my life. So that's exactly what I did. So that's more fictitious than book one and two.
That's really cool. So was book three harder to write?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I'm so good about writing what I know. It's scary. It just flows out of me. So with book three, I had to write about a couple of things that I didn't know, or I had to make up stuff or add material. But what made it a little easier was, you know what? I'm going to write a book about exactly what I want out of life. That's what I'm going to submit into the universe. And that's what I did. And it's so funny how it worked out. I write, my daughter graduates high school and goes to college in California, which she is in college in California. My daughter attends Loyola Marymount. How weird is that? She was going to Wake Forest. She was deferred at Tulane, all East Coast colleges. And she turns around and tells me 2 weeks prior to the deadline, Mom, I'm going to go to California. And I looked at her. And that was almost like the great omen for me. Uh-oh, she's going out there. Mark my words, when I do this film, I'm going to have a lot of work out there. And she loves it out there. And she's a straight-A student, GPA 4.0. You can't get better than that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. She's great.
And the thing that I believe our audience would really have a question about is your ability to be so confident in knowing where you're going.
And oh, absolutely.
I think a lot of people struggle to find a vision or have an idea of where they're going to be in the future. How are you able to discover that and so firmly grasp onto that?
Okay, so here's the answer to that. And here's the problem with so many people. The answer is you cannot care about what others think of you. Do you notice everyone who's striving to get somewhere, everyone who wants to make money, everyone who wants to do, They're all worried about what people think of them and what people are going to say if you fail or if you do. Who cares about failing? You get up, you do it again. There's no such thing. If failure, it's just, I don't believe in mistakes. I don't believe in coincidences. Everything in life is meant to be to get you to the next level. Just like when someone turned, 50 people turned down Brooklyn Story, the 51st person took me on and I wound up getting published. Rejection is protection. It is what it is. Don't care about what people think of you. Move forward. Who cares if it's not marketable? Do what you want to do, not what the next person says. I don't care about what people think of me. I only care about what God thinks of me, and I only answer to God. I answer to no one, no human on this planet do I answer to. I'm also not good at following rules, regulations, and proper protocol. I don't believe in any of it. You beat your own drum, live your own life. God got your back. Done.
Did you always have that?
Always, since I was a little girl. So my mother was completely fucked up, completely dysfunctional. But for some reason with me, she held me in this cocoon. She's like, you are so special. You are so beautiful. You are so talented. You are so smart. No one is better than you. And it was almost instilled in my head as a little girl. So the confidence I have, minus ego, minus cockiness, minus being this, you know, arrogant bitch, I'm none of those. But I have a confidence about me that a lot of people wish they had, or a lot of people are very, well, how is she like that? Especially as a young child, having nothing, being on welfare and food stamps, having to wear dollar jeans all week long. For some reason, everyone liked me and wanted to hang out with me. I wonder why, because I didn't give a shit. I didn't care what people thought about me. I'm me. If you like me, you like me. It is what it is.
Impressive.
It's very important. It's very important. Everyone you see on TV. Now, I know a lot of celebrities personally, and we have the same conversation, and all they want to do, they want to talk about me. They don't even want to talk about themselves. They are the most insecure group you're ever going to get, because everyone is striving to look better than the next, do this. Everything is fake. You know, I'm 50. I don't look 50. People are shocked when I say I'm 50. Why do you tell people your age? Because I'm proud of who I am. I'm 50. I love that I'm 50. I made it this far. The next 45 years of my life are going to be sensational. I'm going to do a major motion picture, and people, women will look at themselves differently after I get this done. That's the goal. Who gives a shit about everything else?
True. And I guess to have this much passion is really, everyone is striving for this term success. And right. You're on the journey and you're loving the journey. Can you ever see there being an end? Like, will you ever look at what you're doing and say, you know what? I've done enough. I'm done.
Well, I don't know. You know what? Yes. I think when Brooklyn Story is made and all is done and we move away from that, and God willing, it goes to levels that I never even imagined, then that journey in my life is done. I could actually close it. When I read Brooklyn Story, when we do the film, I don't even feel it's me anymore, which is how far detached I am from it, which is wonderful because I've learned all my lessons already from it. You know, my first three books are just about me. So I have to be honest, when I'm done with the three books, wherever they go, you know, feature film, I know the first one's a feature, but if the next two go feature or they go TV, it's just, I'm done with my journey. That's my journey. It's over. I want to move into more fictitious work. I want to move into other things. Again, based on what I know, based on characters I know, because I'm great like that. But I'll be done with that whole journey.
Cool.
It's self-satisfying.
So can you talk about the movie at all? At least not about the movie specifically, but just what are the pain points going through production?
So the thing is I wrote the script, and I have a producer. Directors have it right now. A-list directors have it right now. We're waiting on their answers and who's going to attach and their notes. Once that happens, you know, it's called and the financing goes through. There's a lot of moving parts to a film. It takes a village to make a film, as we all know. But once all of that is aligned, then Variety, Hollywood Reporter will announce it. Then I'll do something here locally in New York, and then it's out there. Then you know. You know the distributor, which I can't say yet, mm-hmm. And then it's out there. then you and I could reconnect in a couple of months and we could talk about that good stuff.
Yeah, perfect. That always sounds fun.
Yes.
And since we are going to reconnect, I think it would be good, since we kind of covered your past.
Yeah.
When we reconnect, we'll cover more of your present and the movie, since we'll have more stuff that we can actually get into.
Oh, no, I'm excited about it. I really am.
But before I let you go, we ask all of our guests these same four questions. And okay. I'm really interested to hear what your responses are to them. Well, the first quickfire question, it's completely random. So we get a random question from an audience member and we pick them at random. So this one's a little unique. If your five-year-old self suddenly found themselves inhabiting your body, what would they say?
If my five-year-old self in my body right now at 50?
Yes.
Wow, Suzanne, you did really good with every obstacle that came your way. I'm impressed. I hope I grow up to be as good as you.
Sweet.
I guess I got to go with that, because to handle my situations the way I handle them, it's good. It's very good.
So no regrets.
No, zero. Zero regrets. What's the point? Come on. Listen, you do shit in life, whatever. Own up to it. Be accountable. Move on. You don't like it? Goodbye. Move on. Done.
Cool. Second question. What skills does a young professional need to have straight out of college to be successful? Or just what should people try to learn?
Confidence in yourself. Again, it goes back to this one simple thing. Do not care about what others think of you. Period. Now, I'm not saying be disrespectful. No. This totally, that's not what I'm saying. But if someone, do not, everyone has an opinion in this world. Don't care about what others think of you. Focus on you, your dreams, where you're going in your life. Believe in something higher than yourself. I believe in God. Many people don't. Many people are atheists. They believe in something else. But isn't it funny when something happens in one's life? What do? They go right to God. God, help me. But you didn't want God to help you 20 years prior, but now you want God to help you. But the beautiful thing about God is he's going to help you no matter what. So it's important. Got to have the faith.
Got to have the faith and the confidence. Yeah. So
yeah.
I guess this isn't a question or one of the quickfire, but it's just something to piggyback off of your confidence comment.
Right.
How do you... If you don't have that confidence, right, and you're college age, your daughter's there.
Yeah.
How do you develop that? What do you work on?
Confidence, security with oneself, with one's looks, with one's smartness. It does come in the youth. It really does, on how you're brought up. It's a very difficult process. I mean, in your youth, when your parents or whoever raises you, if they instill the confidence in you, it's huge. No matter what my mother had against her, she instilled that in me. It's the one thing I'm so grateful for, and I love her so much for, even though she was the worst mother alive and she was completely fucked up. That's what I love her for the most. What she instilled in me is invaluable. In turn, instilled it in my daughter, and I broke the chain because my daughter is completely different than my grandmother and my mother and myself. So she didn't have to endure anything. So she's a different person. And my daughter, believe it or not, does not have the confidence that I have. It's really interesting. She's confident, great, but not as confident as her mother. And that's just something because I had Hard Knocks life. I hit the survivor mode. So it was a little bit different. But instilling confidence, you know, that's a really great question. I still have to come up with that answer. For me, it's easy. For others, I don't know if I have the answer to them.
Do you think it really comes down to who you surround yourself with?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it really does. You know, it's almost like you are what you eat. You eat bad foods during the day. We all love them. I'm not going to mention them, but we all love them. And you become lethargic and slow moving, and you're a little, I'm screwed up for the day. You eat well, you exercise, you're on cloud nine.
Exactly.
And I think you have to read, you know, things online, surround yourself with good people, you know, if you go to church, you go to church. It's the little things that build confidence. You have to have it within yourself.
Okay. So the third question would be, what do you believe needs to be sacrificed for true success?
You have to give up some of the hours of fun in your life. You have to give up some of the people in your life that no longer serve you. I hate to say that, but when they become invaluable to you, you have to discard them. You can't be around toxic people, the people that bring you down in the world. It's a no-no. You have to move away from them. You're not hurting them. You're hurting yourself. And if they don't realize it, they don't care about you. I have friends that I don't speak to 6 months, 7 months. We reconnect on the phone like nothing. Those are real friends. The ones that complain, oh, you never call me, get rid of them. Get rid of them. They have their own issues. People project their shit onto you. So when someone says to you something negative, that they're talking about themselves. Very important to realize that.
How do you voice that to an individual? So let's say someone is projecting that negativity on you and they were maybe a close friend.
Right.
How do you say that to them in a way that hopefully doesn't destroy your relationship, but ultimately gives you the space you need?
You say it with no filter. You know, you're projecting your shit onto me, right? It's not me you're talking about. I'm very blunt. I'm very honest. I'm very open. I don't care. So I have no filter. So I'm going to tell you straight out, you don't like it? Bye. If people stay, they really love you. If not, goodbye. You got to live your life like that. Dismissal is a good thing. Saying no is a good thing.
Yeah.
You don't have anyone come in your life and try to drain you. Don't project your shit onto me. Period. One sentence. Watch what happens to them. Because listen, half the world is a narcissist. We know that, right? Think about it. It's crazy. I mean, look what we have today with the social media. Think about it. As wonderful as social media is, brings people together, the FaceTime, I love, well, FaceTime separate, blah, 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 all that good stuff so I could communicate with my daughter. It really is. It's really no good when you think about it. If we didn't have any of the social media, we'd be, who knows where we'd be today? So many things have happened. It's all, everything is based on what you look like. I don't understand it. How much are you going to enhance yourself? Can't you just be real? God created you the way you are. How much enhancement are you going to do until you look stupid? And we have to age. Aging is the process of life. You know, if I'm 50, I don't want to be 20. Ew, who wants to be 20 again? I don't. I have no desire to be 30. Ew, I want nothing to do with it. I love growing, taking care of myself, aging properly, and that's all you can do.
Yeah, social media could be a beautiful place if it was used in the right way.
Yeah, it's a bit of a, come on. It's, yeah. But, you know, we're going to see how that all unfolds too.
That is true.
Yeah, very true.
So the last quick fire question for you. What is one life hack young professionals should apply this week to their life to make their life better? What is one actionable thing they could try this morning, this afternoon, tonight to improve?
Okay. Because we're talking about social media. They should go on all their social media apps because everyone has them. I have it because I'm a professional, so I have to have it. They should delete the people that they no longer need. Even if it's five people from Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, people who are negative or do negative comments or anything, delete them from your life. Watch the shift in the energy that happens. It's the greatest feeling in the world when you delete certain people from your life. It's pretty amazing how your life shifts and it opens the door to let some good ones in. Nothing better than a great conversation with good, honest, spiritual people. It's the only way to go.
So you'd recommend just sifting through which people are kind of pulling you down on social media?
Absolutely.
And letting go?
That's an actionable thing to do this week. Get rid of certain people in your life and see what happens within the next couple of weeks. Even if it's one person who just every conversation is always a downer or negative. We all have people in our lives. All they want to do is gossip and talk negative. Not good.
Not good.
Not good.
I think that's a good way to sum up the interview, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and I hope, you know, this was great. It's so funny. Every time I talk about my life, it makes me realize I can't believe that's my life. It's so over and done with, and I'm so past it, and I've learned so much, and I've grown so much that it's a pretty cool place to be. I never play victim. No pity parties. Yeah, 10 minutes. Get over it. You healthy? Shut your mouth. I'm sorry. It's that's the way it's at. So many people, they don't even look at it, Bobby. They don't even, when you're healthy, they just take it all for granted. Them, as soon as something happens to you, they're running to God or they're running somewhere. You should be doing that all along, thanking God for every blessing you have.
And I think that is one little thing you said there is key, where you can forget about your past because, in a sense, you're forgetting about the way that you, the mistakes you made, the failures, whatever else. But you also said something very key, that you also have learned a lot from your past. So although you put it behind you, you've still taken the little important points and applied them to your future so you can be just better at what you do.
Right. Absolutely.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for joining us.
This was terrific. We will reconnect.
Yes,
and,
we will.
I'll email you separately. But this was great, Bobby. I'm glad we had the time to do it. I'm glad it worked out.
Perfect.
As it's snowing here in New York City.
Oh, we're getting a foot right now here in Minnesota. So lovely.
Oh, yes.
It's always beautiful.
Well, Bobby, thank you.
Thank you
so much for everything.
Hey, good luck with the movie, and we'll connect in a few months.
We definitely will, without a doubt.
Like always, here's the closing to the Master the Start podcast. If you don't like these closings, you can skip it. You could also leave us a comment and we can change them. Or/and if you do love the closings, also leave us a comment. And don't forget, subscribe to the podcast. So really quick, before you go out and enjoy your wonderful week, some reminders from this very podcast. Number one, to become successful and chase your dreams, you must have confidence in yourself. You cannot get caught up in what others say about you and your dreams. Number two, this week, go on social media and figure out those people who are bringing you down. Get these people out of your life to make room for those who will bring you positive energy. All right, everyone, that pretty much wraps up this week of Master the Start. Have a positive week. See you next time.